Remember that all guests appear courtesy of the Fire Wings hotline. Try one of their delicious 21 flavors of wings today. Fire Wings, just wing it. In a moment, we hope to have Charles Davis from the NFL on Fox. And, you know, Doug, when I look at the Kansas City Chiefs, the only concern that I would have them, what happens to this offense when we get later in the year and the weather turns, is their defense going to be able to hold up their end of the bargain?
And the answer is no. That's what the answer is, Grant, because last night we saw the defense struggle, and it was the offense that came through. It's been the offense that's come through all year long. They are, you know, right – they're leading in the NFL, and if they're not leading, they're right there at the top. And I want to say it's them and the Rams. Both of them 4-0, Grant. Rams 35 points a game. Chiefs 36.25 points. Opponents, though, for the Rams 16.75, Grant. Opponents for Kansas City 28.7. And that right there is that's the reason that they're not going to be elite unless they fix that. If they fix the defensive side, Grant, this is a team that could be special.
I wonder how – we'll talk to Charles Davis about that. I don't know if you can fix your defense in the middle of the season if you have the same personnel. Charles Davis, the NFL on Fox. It's always great to have you on. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you guys tonight?
We're doing great. We were talking about the Chiefs. If you weren't a believer in Patrick Mahomes at the beginning of the season, I would think you are now, and I'm saying that not to you, but to everyone listening. But my question to Doug, and you came in at the perfect time, was when the weather turns – And we know how things can get in Kansas City. Will the defense be able to hold up their end of the bargain? Because everything looks hunky-dory now offensively, but we know defensively they got some real issues. Give me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I'm worried about them holding it up while the weather's still nice, too.
Look at you.
I mean, from what I watched last night, they're in good shape if they win the early downs on defense. If they win first down, second down, and now you can turn loose D Ford, Justin Houston, okay, and Bob Sutton, the D coordinator. I've known Coach Sutton a long time. He's a former coach at Army, and he was at Army when I played at Tennessee, and they tied us once and beat us once. And then I covered a few games of his when he was the head coach at Army when I got into broadcasting, and I just like him a bunch. But they are predicated on takeaways much more than they're predicated on just shutting you down. Okay, and you can see that last night, right? Takeaways, getting off the field, that sort of thing. I think at one point they were talking about on the broadcast, the guys were saying their numbers are kind of abysmal everywhere except on third down. They're really good on third down. And that's what's kind of held them in there and kept them going. So if someone can crack the code on third down, take care of the football, then that defense is really struggling, and they need Eric Berry back and the whole deal. But that's going to be the key for everything. It's mainly, can you play everyone close enough on defense and let Mahomes in that offense, you know, rule the day? Because I'd love to see them in a couple of games with offenses that can shoot it out with them. Could you imagine them and the Rams going head-to-head and seeing how much fun that'll be? Them and, I'm trying to think of Pittsburgh, the way Pittsburgh runs offense when they're on top of their game. Those games, you know, you might want to settle in and move your clock a little bit because you might be there for a while. But it's going to be interesting because this week is going to be a major test for them. If I'm not mistaken, Jacksonville goes to Kansas City this weekend.
Oh, yep. And then they're at New England. And then they go to New England after that.
So this is a heck of a stretch. Now, I thought Patrick Mahomes passed a big test last night, and it's one we've talked about before. When can you really judge a young quarterback? And I've always said when he goes into the fourth quarter and he's 10 for 27 and hasn't had any rhythm and needs a couple of drives and boom. Or does he go into the fourth quarter after he's had great success early in the season, like 13 touchdown passes in three games, and you're down 10 in the fourth quarter? Can you bring your team back? Can you do that? He passed that test last night.
Charles, you just said the wicked nine. I believe it's nine-letter word. I've been remiss to ask you about this for a couple weeks now. We're going to jump back to the NFL. Tennessee, man, talk to me. What's going on with you guys, man? I think they're looking for you, Charles. They're looking for a polished gentleman that could come in and turn things around. What's up with your Vols, man?
Oh, Doug, I wish I had a good answer. I really do. I knew we were going to struggle this year. That wasn't a surprise. You know, Coach Pruitt first year, so there's no way I'm jumping in and saying it's X, Y, or Z right now. He's got a lot to work through and a lot to reestablish, almost always like that. As they say, there's a reason he's there. He's a brand new coach. West Virginia game, no surprise whatsoever. You know, we've beaten really bad teams in, you know, East Tennessee State. I can't believe they're playing football.
Yeah.
You know, we beat UTEP, who's been god-awful for the last few years, and it's too bad. Because at one point, you know, they were halfway decent, but they're not anymore. But everyone else, not really. I mean, God, what was the game before Georgia?
Florida.
See, Florida we should be competitive with. And I don't say that because of past history, but Florida's not exactly clicking on all cylinders either.
Mm-hmm.
But they've picked it up and gotten better faster, Doug, than we have. And I thought the talent deficit wasn't great versus Florida. I thought we were very similar. Maybe it turns out I was wrong, because that was a big win for Florida last week at Mississippi State to go down there and Dan Mullen get through all that, where, you know, he's back where he used to coach and have to deal with all those things. And people had some nasty t-shirts that I heard sold out down in Starkville about Dan coming back. But that was a big win for them. But for Tennessee, we actually played Georgia better than I think a lot of us expected. And right now, Doug, we make the dumbest errors. And when I say dumb, I hate to say it that way with college kids, but we make errors that if I'd made that error, my coach would call me a lot worse than that.
Oh, boy.
We had a pick six against Georgia. Okay, gave us a little momentum. I'm not saying we're going to win the game. But, you know, you're going to show better, right?
Get
a pick six. And you know why it came back?
He dropped it at the goal line?
No, we lined up offside.
Oh my God.
We actually had a play. I don't know if you saw it. You might see it on the highlights. Did you see the pass rush? Kid from Tennessee had a nice pass rush. Jacob Fromm is in the pocket trying to throw the football. Knocks the ball out of Fromm's hands. The thing bounces like a basketball to another Georgia Bulldog who runs like 35 yards for a touchdown.
Ouch. It's not bouncing your way.
So I'm not trying to say it like, God, if we just got the bounces, but it just kind of symbolizes where we are. Not only are we not very good, we're not getting bounces as well.
Okay.
So it's a bad double whammy. And let's just be honest about it. The better teams tend to get better luck, don't they?
Yeah, this is
true. It's kind of how it works.
Yeah, you're right.
Charles Davis, the NFL on Fox. You've got the Giants at Carolina this Sunday. Now, I may have missed something. I wanted to ask you, are you aware whether or not Pat Shurmur instituted a new rule this year that prohibits the Giants from throwing the ball down the field?
Grant, you're wrong, man.
I knew that one was coming. In fact, you know, I thought today when I was driving home from another thing, I said, I'm going to talk to the guys tonight, and I know Grant's going to be all over Pat Shurmur for the check down Charlie stuff against the Saints.
Oh, come
and
on, man.
You know, he addressed it in his media deal. And you guys know, you've been around, you do it all the time. What they say to us as media people isn't always the absolute truth, and I'm not saying he's lying, but they're not going to tell us everything. I don't know how much of that is simply Eli looking downfield and saying, I'm not going to make that throw. I don't know. And that's something that we'll have to continue to try and ferret out, because everyone's going to play him the same way until proven different. And Pat Shurmur also did say, and he was right to say this, 10 runs for Saquon Barkley versus a soft zone. Yeah. You know, if they're playing too deep, that gives you a box count that's conducive to running the football. And you've got to try and run it more than that. And remember, they were in that game for the longest time, for God's sakes. Even when they made mistakes, they were only down, 12-7 at the half?
Uh-huh.
And you know, they kept their timeouts at the end of the half, which was a mistake that Pat admitted later. Use your timeouts to try to get the ball back for one more run. They didn't do that. I mean, there are a number of errors in there. I want to see if they start to correct some of this going forward, because they could be a little bit more competitive is the wrong word, but they did leave an opportunity out there. If someone told me Drew Brees would throw for 217 yards and no touchdowns in a game.
And win.
Sign me up.
No way. Right, exactly.
Sign me up to play him that day, please.
Yep.
I've got a shot. And then he just waited too long. Offense never got in sync, and off they went. I watched it on tape. I got to watch it again. And that's just where it went. The defense just kind of really got overwhelmed at the end. But for the most part, they made them kick field goals. And when you do that, you're keeping your team in the game.
Charles, the Patriots, you want to write them off. You think Tom Brady's getting old right
every
now.
Every 2 years, Doug. Yeah, every 2 years, yeah, we go through this.
They're 2-2, but it looks like Edelman is coming back. They got Gordon. He had two targets. I want to say they were about 16 yards apiece, or that's what they equaled out to. Do you see something maybe beginning to click, or are they kind of maybe going the way of beginning to write them off?
No, I'm not ready to write them off because we've seen this. We've done it so many times with them before. You guys remember when they traded Richard Seymour?
Mm.
Remember that one? Mm-hmm. And we was like shockwaves. We're like, what? And again, Belichick was ahead of the curve. He went Branch Rickey on us. You traded him a year too soon rather than a year too late.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And Richard was in decline, and the rest of us didn't know it, and Belichick felt it and got great value for him from Oakland, and off he went. You remember the famous run to Cincinnati? Well, that was after Kansas City just whacked him. And that was the famous one where a reporter, an intrepid reporter, God give him credit. Or I don't know if it was smart or just plain. Is Tom Brady still going to be your starting quarterback, or is there competition? What? You remember Belichick's face?
Yeah,
sure.
Like, are
you
serious
what
right
the
now?
Heck are you talking about? You know, and they said, we're on to Cincinnati. And if I'm not mistaken, didn't they end up in a Super Bowl that year?
Yes, they sure did.
So I'm not, again, predicting, because I think that they have a few more issues. The Lions ran the ball at will against them.
Mm-hmm.
Kerryon Johnson ran for 101 yards, and that's the first time in 72 games the Lions had a 100-yard rusher counting playoffs. 72!
Wow. That's a long time.
And that was their first one, and it came against New England. So that's a place that you've got to keep an eye on and see if people can handle that. I think they're okay this week because they get the Colts on Thursday, and the Colts don't run the ball very well. But Kareem Hunt's going to test that with Kansas City.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see. But am I writing them off? No, I'm actually putting them in pen that they're going to win the AFC East again because that's not exactly a bold bet since they've won it 16 of the last 17 years.
Charles Davis, the NFL on Fox. They've got the Giants at the Panthers this Sunday. I'm curious if what Philadelphia did last year and the way Doug Peterson coached that team, if that has had a ripple effect with some of the other coaches in the NFL as it pertains to going forward on fourth down.
I think you're onto something, Grant. I think there's a copycat element to the league that we talk about all the time. And there's nothing wrong with that because that's what happens in society. When things go a certain way, we trend that way, right? When we find successful things, people want to get on it. When we used to turn on network television, I feel like it's a quaint saying now, right? How many people watch network television now because we're all watching Netflix and everything else and Amazon. But the bottom line is when a successful show pops up, the other networks come up with something similar, don't they? Hoping that style hits in genre. I think you're onto something with Doug Peterson. Now, all these coaches that are starting to go in that direction, I haven't analyzed it all, but I'm guessing that for the most part, they're the up-and-comers because they've been raised a little bit better on this so-called analytics and attempting this stuff. And a lot of the younger ones feel a little more free to try it because they're first-year coaches.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they feel like they might have a little time and a little capital to play with. Vrabel from Tennessee, boy, did it pay off for him because he gave Doug Peterson his own medicine, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Three times on fourth down and overtime.
Yep.
Ran the field goal unit on there, and after the game, he said, we were never going to kick it. Okay?
You know
I just ran them
gamesmanship.
Out there.
I love
hey,
it.
Hey, Charles, right? You know what's interesting about that? I was on a red eye, and I couldn't sleep, and so I'm in New York right now, but I was I'm like okay I'm watching Pro Football Talk with Mike Florio and Peter King, and Peter King said that Mike Vrabel spent the offseason studying every single play that the Philadelphia Eagles ran. And the reason why I asked you in your travels around the NFL, Peter King said that because of Doug Peterson, he's convinced that that's why Mike Vrabel gambled the way he did, and then he talked about Frank Reich, obviously, on his staff last year.
Yep.
But I'm just curious, you know, if we're going to start seeing that occur more based on, I think Peter said that, you know, Vrabel, if the ball is on his side of the 40 forward, he's more inclined to go for it on fourth and short now.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are going to think about that a lot harder. The analytics people have been pumping this for a while, as you guys know. because the odds of going for it are better than, you know, giving up the ball, punting, kicking field, you know, that sort of deal. The odds have always said that. Remember what Dirk Cutter said earlier this year? Yeah, I know what the analytics say, but I'm the one who's going to get fired. Okay?
That's real right there.
You're going to have that old school, new school approach to the whole thing. And then you're going to have guys like Sean McVay with the Rams that isn't connected to anyone we're talking to, right? We're talking about. He's not connected to Peterson, right? There's none of that. He goes his own way, though, and he's a guy that pushes it and pumps it and goes for it. Mike Tomlin actually started a lot of this, not on the fourth down, but remember the going for two?
Uh-huh.
And then he's gotten away from it.
Right.
Because that first year, it was like, hey, they're going for two all the time. He out-Chip Kelly. And since then, he's really backed off from it. I'm not sure why. But I do think we'll see more and more examples of people trying to go get it. Look, Belichick has gone for it plenty of times, and people always come back to that Sunday night game, I think, against the Colts, where he went for it, didn't get it, and turned the ball over, and Peyton took him down and scored, beat him. Everybody was getting on base. He's like, really? I do this all the time. Mm-hmm. This one didn't work. I'm pretty comfortable with my decision. Reich, that was an interesting one because I know where he's coming from. I know what he was trying to do. I hated the field position in doing it, to be frank with you, because it's just too short of a field for Houston in overtime.
Mm-hmm.
I get aggressiveness, but at the same time, that was a 4th and 5 too. Okay, it's kind of like Penn State, Ohio State. That was 4th and 5. I know what you're trying to do, but it's not 4th and 5 isn't the place to gamble with his own read if you're Penn State. And I don't think 4th and 5 is the place on your own 40 in overtime to give them an easy chip shot field goal to beat you. That's the only thing I would say. But I understand what he's telling his team, and it might pay dividends down the road. His team might go, you know something, this coach believes in us.
Yes.
And now we just have to pick him up on the opposite side.
You know, Charles, something a little similar but a little different, Vance Joseph getting a little criticism for the hook and ladder. I personally thought, look, if that goes through, I mean, he is the most brilliant mind in football.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on
– it was just poorly executed.
Okay, because they could have just got the first down. If he would have caught that, it would have been a first down, right?
Yeah, it was poorly executed. I thought, you know, look, the hook and ladder is one of those fantastic plays that we love when it works. And we remember when it works because it works infrequently.
That's the best way
I can put it. So Doug Grant will tell you about the great Miami Dolphins-San Diego Chargers playoff game that Kellen Winslow came out of the game multiple times, kept going back in. What did he make? 13 catches, 161 yards, heat exhaustion, and San Diego finds a way to win on the road against Miami. People are in a lot of ways, people remember that, and they also remember that Miami pulled off a hook and ladder in that game that was a big-time play.
Mm-hmm.
We remember Boise State with the hook and ladder, okay? So we remember those, but how often otherwise are we quoting it? People try it. We do it. Oh, yeah, that's right. They did it in Varsity Blues with Billy Bob. But, you know, overall, it's not a very high percentage deal. I think what people were talking about is, hey, throw to a certain spot, get out of bounds, and give yourself one more chance.
One more shot. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Charles Davis, NFL on Fox. You know, I want to get back to the NFC South, and I'm trying to figure out this division. I think Atlanta defensively, I don't think they're going to be able to overcome those injuries. We saw it again on Sundays, and I'm not saying you just discount them, but I'm going to for the sake of conversation.
Sure.
Who do you think then is the team? You're going to see Carolina this week. You've seen New Orleans. And then, you know, Tampa came back down to earth against a good Chicago team.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that division right now.
Carolina's got a chance to take charge of that division. Their loss was on the road at Atlanta. And that's kind of been a house of horrors for them, whether it's the old Atlanta, you know, Georgia Dome or the new stadium. They just can't. They have a hard time winning there. But they have a chance to take charge of the division because they get the Giants at home this week coming off of their open week. And that'll be a big deal for them. Most of their guys are healthy, and they're going to get Thomas Davis back, okay, after four games, after this week. He comes back, and, you know, one of their starting linebackers because he had the NFL suspension for PEDs. So you've got a lot of good things happening. Cam is playing the best football he's played since his MVP year. Check out his passing percentage. I think he's somewhere around 66%. Okay, Cam's like a 58% thrower for his career. So what he's doing with Norv Turner is working, but Norv Turner is also not stifling his ability to run the football. And Christian McCaffrey, this is one time where, you know, I'm going to jump out there and kind of jump up on a chair and say, I did say this, all right? Because you guys have known me for years. I'm not big on that. But I keep seeing all these things coming out of Carolina where the Carolina media is kind of chortling. And Christian is like, yeah, I got sick of hearing it about his ability to run inside. That people kept saying he couldn't run inside the tackles. I said he could run inside the tackles during the draft process. I believe that he could do that. And people go, no, he can't do it, he can't do that. And then his first year, oh, I told you he couldn't do that. Did anyone see the Cincinnati game? Mm-hmm. I mean, ran for 180. I mean, ran 28 times. They can't all go to the perimeter, folks. He yep. can do it, and he did it well. I said he's the most complete player in his draft coming out. I wasn't wrong. This kid is special. He is flat-out special. And that offense is starting to hum a little bit, despite the fact their offensive line has been blown out. Both starting tackles are gone. They were missing Trey Turner, their starting guard, for the last two games. They've been filling in like crazy. Chris Clark is playing left tackle. Last time I remember Chris Clark, he's playing left tackle with Denver in a Super Bowl against Seattle, and everybody was just whizzing by him, and he's playing really well, you know? And the right tackle is Taylor Moton, the draft pick out of Western Michigan a couple years ago. So they have fashioned together an offense that people didn't expect, and I think it's going to keep getting better under North Turner.
Charles, the Rams, you look at them, a complete ball club, a kid that I really like out of Eastern Washington, Cooper Kupp.
Cooper Kupp.
Man, I liked him in the draft. He was kind of yep. was looking at some stuff. I believe, actually, I was watching you on NFL Network, and you guys were talking about underrated players and different things, and I looked him up and was like, wow. When you look at this ball club, I see them going to barbecues together and different things. The synergy between Goff and McVay, chess bumping on the field. Is something yep. special happening there?
It is, and we're seeing it happen in front of us. And, you know, we remember the best team, you know, best team on turf,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was the St. Louis Rams.
Yes.
You know, now they're out on the West Coast doing a very similar deal and just having a ball and freewheeling it. And one of the things I keep coming back to, guys, is this. We talk a lot about preseason and what we're going to do with it, right? Because it's not a great deal for our fans. But the paradigm is always you've got to get guys working preseason. You just have to be careful about it. They need some live game action, but you just got to be careful about how much. And when you have a young quarterback, he can't get enough snaps, right? He has to get some action. Jared Goff's going into his third year, took no snaps in preseason. Mm. Todd Gurley, no snaps in preseason. The starting offense, I was told, took 7 snaps together, minus Goff and Gurley, in preseason.
Unbelievable.
And they came out of the gate, and it's not just that they're putting up points and beating people, but have you seen them have a lot of illegal motions? No. Have they jumped offside? No. Have they been, you know, slow out of the huddle for delay of game penalties? No. All the things you might expect for people who haven't really been together. And we talk all these other teams that we talk to, oh, God, we're trying to get it together, and, you know, and we didn't play much in the preseason, and, you know, we're just trying. None of that with the Rams. So my question is how and why? What is Sean McVay doing practice-wise with those guys that's keeping them that sharp
right.
that they can start a season without having really had a preseason? Because everyone else is all still like, hey, you know, 2-3 games, we'll be in sync. They were in sync from day one. Whatever they're doing there is something yep. special, and the rest of the league is going to have to try and figure it out.
Charles, have a safe trip up to Carolina, and please, just, you know, maybe you can talk to Eli for me and just say, hey, you know what, throw the ball, just give a jump ball 50 yards down the field. I don't care. If just tell him, hey, just try throwing it 50 yards, throw it high in the air and see if Odell can catch it, all right, please?
We don't care if 3 guys are down there,
no,
give 13
just
a chance.
Just throw it up there and at least see if he can catch the ball, for crying out loud. Thank you, Charles.
Just give him a chance. I'll fly that note to him.
Take care, buddy.
Appreciate
be
you.
Good. Guys, be good. Great to talk with you. Bye-bye.
All right, he's the best. Charles Davis, the NFL on Fox, right here on Sports 1140 KHTK. Rolling right along, Grant Napier, Doug Christie.
Yeehaw.
Do you want to talk about the Kings last night? If you want to talk about anything that Charles just had to say or baseball, give us a call at 339-1140, 800 920-1140. Just love talking to Charles. And you're right, it's a tough time to be a Tennessee Volunteer.
Oh, man. You know what? Last week we got off and I was like, man, I got to remember. And today I heard him say the word. I didn't remember, but he said Tennessee something. And I said, oh, there it is. I got to. Yeah, it's tough, man. As polished and as successful as Charles is, I'm surprised they haven't come and got him in some shape, form, or fashion. But I think he's probably happy doing what he's doing as well, Grant.
Yeah, I would say so. I think so. I think, think about him. He's elevated himself to the top of the profession, the number two team on Fox, NFL Network as well. He's great. Great guy. I'm very, 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 very happy for him. He's just a great guy. All right. We are going to talk about the baseball game coming up tomorrow as well, as it's the playoffs, as we all know. We will take your phone calls on that at 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Also, coming up on the show today, Dave Yeager. All mm-hmm. right. So we'll talk to him, get his thoughts on what happened last night. Ian O'Connor, the author of Belichick, The Making of the Greatest Coach of All Time, Iron Eagle at 6 o'clock. So with Dave Yeager coming up here in the next 30 minutes, let's get back and talk about the game last night. Let's talk specifically about De'Aaron Fox. What did you like? What did you not like about what he did last night?
Well, you know what I liked is the defensive ability. I saw him getting after a few people, Grant, but I also see that he can push the button and he can just go, it seems like, when he wants to go. He attacked the rim one time. They didn't call a foul. Met body to body in midair, body control, finish at the basket. There was a move he put on somebody and kind of stepped back, shot a three-pointer. It was nothing but net. And what I'm looking for out of the young players, especially De'Aaron, and that was more last year, what I'm about to say, but it's for Bagley and Harry, is I'm looking for flashes. Then you want the consistency. You want those flashes more often, and I believe that that's what we're seeing from De'Aaron. I love the way, Grant, that he pushed the pace. He looked to have control over the ball and understanding of what he's doing. He didn't look lost or anything like that, and I like what I see from him, and if that's where we're going to start and we're going to build from there, I'm happy for him.
All right, let's get to Paul. Paul, you're on with Grant and Doug. Go right ahead.
How you guys doing?
Hey, Paul. Good.
Hey, Grant. A couple things I would like to ask your get your intake on. Number one, I just want to say to all those people that say that Bagley's not good, they're crazy as all outdoors. He's a rookie. I haven't seen a rookie in the NBA that came right to the NBA. Well, there's been a couple. But there hasn't been that many to come and, shine right away. So I really believe that Bagley has a lot of skills. People need to give him some time here, though. You know what I'm saying?
Trust me, I know what you're saying, and so does Doug, and so does most of the people. Yes, I completely know what you're talking about. I don't even know. I opened up my show today because I just can't believe the negativity surrounding Marvin Bagley after one game. It's beyond absurd to a point where it's actually comical.
Then a couple things I want to get into. Well, one thing I want to get into real quick with you, just Farrell. I watched this kid play with Dallas last year. Saw some highlights of him. He's very impressive. I like his shot. What's your take on him?
Yogi Ferrell, you say?
Yeah.
This is one game, but I would agree with you. I saw him in some games in Dallas as well, and there's a consistency in what he's doing. It's not by accident. He's confident. There's a cockiness to him, but not going overboard, meaning that he's confident. He's highly aggressive. I was telling Grant earlier that I really like the way that he stays engaged, and what I mean by that is a lot of times there will be a free throw, and guys, they kind of get lost in the moment, and the game starts back up. He's looking at the opposition's bench. He's reading plays. He's sending them back to the bench. If this is going to be what Yogi gives off the bench will be potent and deadly because you're going to get Buddy Hield doing that. You're going to get him. Yep. Yes, that's the perfect word.
And I'll tell you something, Paul. I've said this before. And Paul, I don't know if you were listening, but the people that I know in Dallas, and one of them being the TV announcer, Mark Folliwell, off the record, he told me, you guys got yourself a heck of a player. And then when I had him on my show, He was just talking about how much the Kings fans are going to love him, how that they are very disappointed in Dallas that he is not there. And he said the Kings got themselves a heck of a player. So I'm excited. I'm very excited.
I'll tell you this. I really believe in my heart. I've been a Kings fan forever. I've been through all the hell. I've been through, you know, Doug Christie, you know, going off on players. You know, I've been through everything. And, you know, I really believe we're going to do at least – we're going to win at least 40 games this year. That's what I'm seeing, at least over 40. And then my last thing I want to talk to you about, and you know I'm going to go there with you on this one real quick with you, and I'm not going to talk too much of your time, but I'm a diehard Broncos fan. And I'm very displeased with Case Keenum. We should be talking about a Broncos win last night, not a Broncos loss. What I mean by that is that number once again, Case Keenum throws an interception once again in the game. Once again, he missed Demaryius Thomas on the sideline with about 30 seconds left. He was running right down that. He missed that throw. You cannot miss that throw, Grant.
Let me ask you, where was the defense on the final two drives of the Chiefs? Where were they? Okay, I mean, I understand what you're saying about Case Keenum, but, you know, the defense had a chance to win that game last night, and they didn't do it. And listen, as much as I hope that you're right and I'm wrong, the Kings aren't going to win 40 games this year in the Western Conference. I mean, I love your enthusiasm and your passion, and as I said, I hope that I am wrong and you're right, but I think that, you know, you got to be a little bit realistic about this when you look at the conference that they play in and how young the Kings are. Let's get to Russ. You're on with Grant and Doug. Hello, Russ.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Take it away from basketball for a bit. Talk about the A's. Do you think that they'll give the starting pitcher tomorrow a short leash, being that their bullpen is their heart of their team?
Absolutely. I don't think he's going to go any more than three outs.
Yeah, because I figure it's like a game seven, you know, winner take all. I think they're just going to put out all the stops and just try to go, you know, advance.
Well, obviously, that's what they're going to try to do. Let's get to Kareem. Hello, Kareem. Welcome. They're not going to try to lose and not advance.
Easy, Grant.
How's it going, Doug and Grant?
What's happening, Kareem?
Oh, man, I'm doing good, man. So I want to kind of get back into that Monday night game. The caller that, you know, said, you know, Case Keenum missed Thomas. He did miss him. He was wide open. But, you know, the difference between, you know, a great quarterback and a quarterback that's probably, you know, a journeyman like Keenum is, you know, money, Mahomes. I mean, the guy, you know, you posed a question to that caller, Grant, you know, what happened to the defense down the stretch. It was Mahomes, man. The guy, he was improvising. You know, that play he made with the left hand was, you know, kind of take you back to Brett Favre. And then he made another throw where he got pushed to the right side, and he threw a dart to the guy.
30 yards.
It was 3rd and 20, and they got it to 3rd and 7. So, you know, I was waiting to see Mahomes get in a situation where, you know, it was adversity. You know, Mile High is a tough place to play. And, you know, down 10 in that fourth quarter, man, that kid was unbelievable. He just, you know, put the team on his back, and, you know, he led him to that win. So, you know, he kept, you know, the linebacker at bay, Miller, and he couldn't really do too much last night. You know, I think we're in a collision course, man, for the Rams and the Kansas City Chiefs, man, for the Super Bowl. I know the Patriots are going to always be there, but, you know, what Mahomes is doing is unbelievable. Kelce was shut out that first half. Second half, he got like 6-7 catches for about 80 yards. And, you know, they got so many weapons, man, so I'm looking forward to see what they do in the AFC West. And, you know, he stepped up big, man. So,
you know,
I'll take your comments off the air.
Yeah, this week is going to be the biggest test for him. Grant said next week also they're going to play the Patriots. But this week he plays the Jacksonville Jaguars. And this is going to be – if he comes through this one with shining colors, man, watch out, because he has no interceptions right now, nothing but touchdowns, and he's facing a defense that is top shelf.
Yeah, if they win this week, they're in the driver's seat to be the number one seed in the AFC.
Yeah, definitely. And the thing about it, like you say, you know, with the Jacksonville Jaguars, you know, they got a great defense, but you can't really trust Bortles.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to try to allow, you know, that, because Kansas City defense, man, they was atrocious last night. A lot of missed tackles. You know what I'm saying? That game could have really got out of hand. But to me, that's the difference between, like I said, Case Keenum and a guy like Mahomes, man. Thanks for the time, fellas. Have
appreciate
a blessing.
Appreciate you. Yes, yes.
Well, you know, I'm not going to bag on Case Keenum just yet. He was a starting quarterback on a team that went 13-3 last year.
And, I mean, Grant, listen, he got them off to a really good start this year. Did you have the Broncos, first in the AFC West this far along? I don't think anybody did. They are doing things that we didn't see.
But I didn't have the Chiefs being undefeated either. I thought the Chiefs were going to struggle because of Mahomes' inexperience. Obviously, I'm wrong. And I have no problem saying I'm wrong. I don't think anybody could have forecasted. Maybe Andy Reid could have, but how good Patrick Mahomes is, you know, and how well he has played. I mean, the guy right now. And again, I know it's only 25% of the season, but we can only go based on what we've seen. Based on what we've seen, he's the MVP of the league so far.
You know, the thing is, Grant, if you believed, and we were just talking about Yogi Ferrell and listening to people that from Dallas or listening to people from Minnesota with Nemanja Bjelica. And this is the same thing with Mahomes, because if you listen to any of the players in the locker room, they said, this guy is incredible, but we hadn't seen him yet because obviously Alex Smith was on the field. So now that we've seen him, I think that the players already knew that this is what was going to happen.
All right, if you want to call the program, 339-1140, we'll take the break. This is Sports 1140 KHTK. Coming up at the top of the hour, Kings head coach Dave Yeager. We'll talk to him about last night, and they get ready to take on the Lakers on Thursday, and then a very tough back-to-back. I know it's preseason, but you have a 7:30 game on Thursday, and then you have a pretty lengthy trip to get to Seattle. And so I'm not coaching a team, but I would think you're going to see a lot of guys, a lot of different combinations play on Thursday and Friday. To wrap up the first week of the preseason. But we definitely saw some good things last night. I think if you're going to nitpick, that's what I'm doing here, I want to see more rebounding from Scal Labi, Sierra, and Marvin Bagley when they're on the floor. That's an area that I think those two really have to concentrate. I thought Willie Cauley-Stein's rebounding was very, very good last night, as evidenced by 10 rebounds in the first half. And, you know, that's an area that he has to be very consistent in. I want to see Scal and Marvin. They got to get boards too, Doug.
You know, oddly enough, when you talk about Scal and Marvin, they have each one has the thing that the other one needs. Scal needs to be a little bit more athletic and use his athleticism to get the rebound. And Marvin needs to use his body a little bit more as opposed to just trying to jump and grab the rebound, box out, hit, and then go after the basketball. Scal is trying to get position, and he's 7 feet, but he's not jumping as high as you see Marvin. So each of them needs to do the other thing. But I agree. I would like to see 7 to 10 from each of them. That'd be a good number.
Well, you make a great point. You know, in college, you can just get by if you're Marvin Bagley with being better and more athletic than everybody else. But in the NBA, you know, you're going against guys that are just like you. So you've got to be able to put a body on someone to get a rebound.
Yeah. You listen, at this level, they're looking to expose whatever little bit of weakness it is that you do got. That's what the scouting reports and all those things are for. And for Marvin right now, there's a scouting report on him. But when it comes to the defensive side, like we talked about, listen, you go to the rim soft, he is going to bat it against the backboard. So that's not necessarily right. So he has to understand, what does a scouting report say about me, and then how do I attack that? And that's what a young player has to learn how to do in Grant on a night-to-night basis.
And I'm looking for a bounce back on Thursday, and I don't want to say bounce back too much with Justin Jackson, because we saw that last year, and that was his roller coaster year. And again, I understand that he's entering a second year, but he's not a second-year kid that's 20. You know, he's got multiple years of experience at North Carolina, and he went through last year and he got a number of starts. Consistency is the word with him, and you were talking about his defense to set up his offense, or, you know, as they say, bring your glove to your field if you're not doing much at the plate. But we saw a very good summer league after a disastrous start in game one in Sacramento, and then he was really he was the Kings' best player the rest of the way. But that summer league, I need to see it now in the preseason from him.
Grant, that's what we saw last night is the difference in summer league and the difference in the elite athleticism and competition level in the NBA. There's a distinct difference, and it was easier for Justin Jackson to get his shot off, to get his rhythm, a lot of different things. On top of the fact that in the summer, he was the focal point of the offense. Now you're not necessarily the focal point of the offense. So now, 15 to 20 shots goes down to five to seven shots. And so now you have to be highly efficient in the shots that you get. That's why I say, let your defense dictate things. Get out in the passing lanes. Get yourself a steal and a layup. At least with being 6'8 and athletic and long, you should at least get one of those a game, every single game. That means that you're reading defense, you see a pick and roll, you shoot the gap, you deny a pass, you get out in the wing, and you get your. And if you don't get the layup, Grant, you get yourself two free throws. What does that do? That gives you rhythm.
Be nice to see Bielitsa play this weekend as well. We'll ask Dave Yeager about his status when he comes on in about 10 minutes. But there were definitely some positives. You know, I think the first positive is you won the game. And I know that games don't count. But if for a young team, hey, I like the fact they won the game. You know, at the end of the game, Phoenix had some of their main players on the floor. You know, Ayton was on the floor at the end. Jackson was on the floor at the end. So, you know, if you're going to play the game, play to win it. I know it's preseason, and normally I don't care about that stuff. But when you're dealing with a young team, I think you go out and win these games.
Grant, not only do you win them, but you learn how to win them, because there are ways to win games, especially when the game is like it was. I believe starting the fourth quarter, it was 72-72. Now you're in a dogfight. What are you going to do? Are you going to attack the rim? Are you going to settle for jumpers? Get yourself down early. Where does the ball go, Grant? Because that's one thing that was a question mark. Who is going to be the person that when that time comes? It was Vince Carter last year. It was Zach Randolph last year. Well, now it's a new year. Where does that ball go? And there was a couple times, and I really like this, when people talk about Marvin Bagley, Grant, where he was the ball was going to him, but he wasn't necessarily scoring. He was passing the ball out of the post and finding people because he has that ability as well. Yep. So there are questions that are going to be answered, and being put in those spots is good for the Kings.
One thing I mentioned on radio last night with Gary Gerald, it was, and I said that it was almost too much, Harry Giles and Marvin Bagley constantly looking for one another, at times overdoing it. And I think that's more of a positive at this point of the year than a negative. But what are your thoughts on that?
You know, what it takes me back to, Grant, it takes me back to Vlade and Webb. And there's an inside game that has to happen. And what ends up happening when those guys look for each other like that, Grant, the perimeter players learn how to pick and screen for each other and cut to the basket, and then you become involved in that game. But I will say this, when those guys are inside, they're looking for each other because normally they're getting double teamed, the big guy's not paying attention. I agree with you. I like the fact that they're looking for each other. And are you overdoing it a little bit? It could be, but that is something that'll work its way out. It's better that they look for each other and have that camaraderie than not.
There were a couple of times, and again, I get the fact that we're dealing with one game, and so I'm not worried about it, but the spacing was not ideal. In other words, they were too close to one another.
And that's something that you learn. I know the exact play. I believe where we were sitting, Grant, it was down to our right. Marvin Bagley had the ball on the right block, and it was the wrong angle that Harry had. He needed to come up more towards the free throw line, which, to your point, would have gave better spacing. Now the ball comes to him as opposed, I think it got knocked out of his hands, and it was a turnover.
That's correct. It got knocked out of his hands, and it came back the other way. So the one thing we do know, just in watching Harry, he's a very gifted passer. All right, so one preseason game in the books. The Kings will leave for L.A. tomorrow. They'll play Thursday against the Lakers, and then, of course, Friday in Seattle against Golden State. When we come back, Dave Yeager will join us right here on Sports 1140 KHDK.